ba 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 na na ba 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 na 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 ba 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 na 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 ba 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 na na ba 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 na na to ga ni ro po ta to ri ka ni ma ro ma ni ka no ki ka ba 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 na na yo plano fu la pano no tu na ba na na la ka mo pi ta la mo ba na na ba 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 na na トカリのポタトリカニマロマニカのチカババババナナ。
You finally found the most generic live show. This is the generic live show with Dale Campbell.
Now if that doesn't put a smile on your face, I don't know what does. And if you don't speak Minion, that was happy birthday. That's right. It was my birthday yesterday, and in the spirit of on-air jokes, I am not letting it go. No, it's fine. I'm confused on what I was meant to say. But in all seriousness, though, I am flattered by all of the birthday wishes, so I do thank you for those. I'm doing this for a couple of reasons, but I won't say them on the air. I'm not doing it. But what I am doing is I'm doing a show. Welcome to the second hour, diving into a brand new week here on the Generic Live Show with recently to... Oh, yeah, there we go. I'm having way too much fun with my dump button today. So I do... I'm hearing double. Okay, so... We have breaking news. Chappelle Corby finally has a date to call Australia home. Chappelle Corby is bound to return to Australia in May. Here is more details.
Chappelle Corby has just 6 months left in Bali after being given the final date of serving her drug trafficking sentence. Indonesian authorities have confirmed the 39-year-old will be forced out of the country when her parole expires in May next year. She's been spending her final months catching some sun, as shown by these photos obtained by News Corp. It's likely Corby will head home to Australia and be banned from returning to Bali.
Like I said last hour, this story is huge. More than 12 years, after she was busted on her way into Bali with 4.2 kilos of cannabis on her bodyboard bag, and after almost a decade in prison, convicted drug smuggler Chappelle Corby is in sight again of calling Gold Coast home. Corby, currently on parole in Bali, has 6 months of her drug trafficking sentence left to serve. And the parole board, which currently monitors her, have confirmed the release date for Corby is May 27th, 2017, News Corp reports. It is expected that she'll be immediately deported from Indonesia and banned from ever travelling to Bali in the foreseeable future. The now 39-year-old was released from prison in February 2014, 9 months after she was convicted of attempting to transport the... 9 years. Excuse me, I keep saying months. 9 years after she was convicted with attempting to transport the cannabis. Indications are she will return to the Gold Coast and perhaps join her sister Mercedes, working at Mercedes's recently opened Coolangatta Bar and Laneway Dining Bar. Mercedes moved back to the Gold Coast in earlier years after many years of living on and off in Bali as her sister served her prison sentence. Mercedes told Gold Coast Bulletin the bar had become a quote-unquote family business, but it remains of how Chappelle will be involved. Quote, no, we aren't really talking about that stuff. We'll wait and see what happens, unquote, Mercedes said. Quote, for now, it's just nice to wait and see what happens. when it gets closer to her coming home, Colby was convicted of smuggling 4.1 kilograms of marijuana into Bali in 2005 and sentenced to 20 years in jail. She protested her innocence throughout the trial, insisting she had no knowledge of the cannabis found in her Bodyborg bag, and that the drugs were in fact planted there by another party. She tried to appeal the conviction and the sentence, but was denied by an Indonesian Supreme Court. An appeal for clemency to an international president, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono, on the grounds of her mental illness in 2010, was unsuccessful. Corby's sentence was later reduced to 15 years after a judicial review in 2012. In February 2014, she became the first Australian to be granted parole in Bali, the second of which in Indonesia. Now, like I said last hour, and we don't have time to kind of dive in like I did last hour to this story, but like I said last hour, I think it's important to know how big this story is for Australian, not just Australians in general, but just Australian journalism as a whole, following Chappelle Corby and, I suppose, her journey is probably the wrong word, but her trial, definitely, the trial is definitely the better of the words, but following her personal life and following how she's been coping in all of this definitely is something that's going to come to an end. But in terms of timeline-wise, I had a thought in the commercial break as I was bouncing around in the halls, as I want to do in commercial breaks. I do get up and walk around. I had a thought as I was bouncing around in the hallways, thinking to myself, but will it definitely be the end? I mean, because I had said last hour it's kind of this end of the line, but when I had the thought bouncing around the halls here, will it definitely be the end? I'm not sure if it will be or not for Corby, if the media, particularly very localized media here, I understand that this is an Australian story through and through, but we are live and local and proud of it, but it's definitely going to be telling if Chappelle Corby, who was convicted in 2005, around the time of the Bali 9, as I discovered last hour, but will they indeed keep following her as she gets old? Gets on with her life, rather. When it gets older, she'll be 40. Listen, let's just say she'll be returning to Australia around the time that she is 40. She's 39 currently, so she will be at some point 40 when she's returned here to the country, whether that be when she's had her birthday over there in Bali or whether not. It depends as well. I had also had the thought when I was bouncing around in the halls, kind of, will she do some? Is she more inclined to do something here? When she's done something like what should she? She's been convicted guilty of something like this. I don't know whether that would definitely be on her record, and that would definitely be kind of infringent on her opportunities to get, of course, employment and the likes as well. But I think further than that, going out and socializing and regrowing that kind of friendship circle is definitely going to be something that's quite difficult for her, having this on her record. I also said this said this last hour. We had to dig into it. Sorry, I said I wasn't going to dig into it, but I'm digging into it now. So, and we will get to that story, the GP story, in just a moment. Actually, I'll save that for after the break. I've got this other story for the meantime. So, what was I saying? I was saying something. Oh, I said, I was thinking, wow, I did have a thought. I want to reiterate it because I said it last hour. I can't remember what it was now. Poo. Anyway, but oh, family business. Do the family want them tied to the family business? That was not it. Poop. I lost my train of thought. But I again, like I said last hour, I think in terms of the Bali 9 and the ringleaders being that. Oh, that's what it was. Okay, work backwards, Dale. So Corby has claimed at the time and during the trials and all the and the hearings that someone else had placed the marijuana there as you know, there to begin with, but no one had any proof of that. Will that later come out as well as to who put that there? I'm kind of shocked that Corby hasn't come out and opened up and said, yeah, XYZ placed it there, go question them, sort of thing. That has not happened, and honestly, I'm quite surprised that it hasn't happened. I think where to from here in terms of Corby, I think her, the best thing for her to do when she comes back is to lay low, and that's going to be really hard because a lot of the news outlets are going to want to question her in terms of what was your time like over there and pressure her into questioning. That's definitely going to be hard. But in terms of going out and being this not celebrity figure, but icon, because she really has been, again, like I said, following the story all the way through, she's been this sort of icon of, you know, goes over there. The storyline is, you know, you heard it all before from in here, and I don't need to repeat it again for you, but laying low, not doing anything, it's probably the best thing for Miss Corby. But will she though? That's the concern I have, and I don't know whether she will or not. Her best plan is to come home, is to do some interviews, and then just go into hiding. I think going into hiding is probably the best way to go around it. Whether she will or not is another story, but only time will tell. May 27th, 2017 is when her release date is, according to News Corp, that is. But that, again, huge story, and just, you need to take a time back and to break down everything from the last 11 years and 6 months. So there's no way around it. She's icon. Not in a good way, by the way. Icons can be good and bad. This one's definitely in the bad category. Example. She's an example. So as we continue here on the Generic Live Show. Now, We'll take our break a little bit earlier because I do want to get to this GP story. GPs are going to get some massive, some massive cuts to them. We'll break them down for you as we continue here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us. It's 10:19. Never miss a minute of the Generic Live Show. Find us on iTunes. Just search the Generic Live Show and listen. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. And yes, this is a happy birthday song in pure on-air joke fashion. I am playing all the middle bumpers of the show being birthday songs in memory of my birthday yesterday, in mortem of my birthday yesterday. That is where in mortem of my birthday yesterday, it sounds like I'm dead, which knowing the weekend I've had, I kind of am. I'm not gonna beat around the bush here, but thank you everyone for the kind wishes, the birthday wishes. You still have one segment of weird royalty free birthday music to go. So have fun with that. So here is let's break it down now. So government Medicare watchdog threat to GP home visits. So there are after-hours lifesavers beloved by families and emergency departments alike, but a government crackdown could make it harder for a GP to make a house call in the dead of the night. This could be increased pressure on hospital emergency departments, a doctor group has warned. A coupling in after-hour visits over the recent years, a 2.8 million has caused a Medicare cost blowout as bulk bill services target working families who can't get to a GP working hours. The government's Medicare watchdog, the Professional Services Review, warned in its annual report that some doctors are now bulk billing Medicare $129 for an urgent after-hours visit simply to reissue a prescription or deal with an uncomplicated rash. Yikes. The Royal Australian College of General Practitioners says that these types of visitors should instead be paid at the non-urgent rate of $75. Yikes. The Howard government raised the amount of Medicare paid for home visits to encourage them, and the policy saw the proportion of GP presentations at hospital emergency departments fall from 54% to 47%. A government task force, part of the government's Medicare review, is due to report soon on after-hours care. I knew that didn't make sense. The medical disrupting services that provide after-hours care fear it is poised to call for cutbacks and restrictions, and they are fighting back. They are warning hospital emergency services department will be under even more pressure. And more pressure if cuts are made unattractive for doctors to provide after-hours care. A Delicate Access Economics report they commissioned shows it will cost the healthcare system $724 million over the next 4 years if after-hour visits to homes and aged care facilities are discouraged. A survey of 50,000 patients using after-hours doctors showed that 56% would have called an ambulance, gone to an emergency department, or attended an after-hours clinic if they couldn't get access to a home visit. Only 44% would have waited to see their regular GP the next day. Most alternatives would be much more costly to the taxpayer. A visit to an emergency department for GP-type care costs $368. It costs $256 when a patient phones the Health Direct phone services, and $1,351 when an ambulance is called. A visit to after-hours clinics on average costs $93, the report states. The report also suggests that any cuts would simply be a cost-shifting exercise by the federal government. The federal government will save money if Medicare rules GP after-hour visits are tightened and rebates are charged, but the states will have to pay more for resulting in increased attendances in emergency departments. President of the National Association for Medical Disrupting Services, Mr. Spyro Dakanakis, said that doctors who provide care during business hours are feeling threatened by the competition formed from after-hour services. This is driving a call for change. 80% of GPs do not provide after-services care. Then there's a story about the Sydney mum. So, Australian Medical Association Vice President Mr. Tony Bartwan says his organisation is concerned some after-hours doctors don't report back their patients to the regular GP and the patient care is being fragmented. The AMA is heading up a review of GP after-hour care, a part of the MBS review. The MBS review will produce a consultation document that says it will be made public for consultation. A spokesperson for Health Minister Susan Lee said. RACGP President Dr. Biston Siddle says that there are some concerns that other doctors' working hours are not general practitioners but trainee neurosurgeons or trainee specialists. The report says there will be an increase in after-hour visits was an intention of the Howard government policies changes that increased Medicare rebates for the service. It also breaks down after-hours calls. I'll read the health report in the break, I think, because it's, oh god, it's 110 pages. No, I'm not doing that at all. Okay, wow, okay, I'm not doing that at all. That's a huge interim report. Okay, how about I don't do that? So, it breaks down the after-all calls per state. So in July, so July 2015 to June 2016, New South Wales had about 695,000. Victoria had 697,000. Queensland had 762,000. South Australia had 367,000. Western Australia had 231,000. Tasmania had 39,000. ACT 29,000. And Northern Territory had 15,000, with Australia having around 2.8 million total. How much after hours cost for Medicare? Medicare rebate for urgent after hours care home visit 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. is $129.80. After 11 p.m. to 8 a.m. is $153, and non-urgent home visit after 6 p.m. is $75. That is wow. Okay, so that is just, you know, I'm still here. I did a dumb. I closed everything. So I no longer have anything to say, but I will say this. So it is definitely a cost cutting method, I will give them I'll give them that, but I think it's important to see. I understand why it's being, while the costs are being cut, but I, on the other side of it, I understand why we shouldn't. I think it's important to trim the fat, but I think these home call services are being utilized. It's not that they're not being utilized, so we can ultimately get rid of them. I think there's definitely a differentiation there, you know. Excuse me. You can't have your cake and eat it too, which is kind of what this is. You can't cut the home care services and still have them being provided, if that makes sense. Not at the effective rate that they are, and they're, again, not wasteful services, and they're still being used. So it's not that they're not being used. So that I hope that that makes sense. So as we continue here on the Generic Live Show, more coming up as we continue. We need to take a break. It's 11:33.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Happy birthday to you.
You've only found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. That is right. Now we're getting techno all up in here. I don't know whether that's a good thing or not. We are running a slightly behind. I do apologise for that. Sorry for abruptly having to go to a commercial break, but I do apologise for that. I hate doing that often, but had to run to commercials there. In terms of that, what I was talking about before the break, I think, again, I want to make sure I'm clear. I want to make sure that those services still exist, because I think they are getting utilized. But I feel like if we can trim the fat a little bit, there definitely is a middle ground that everyone can be happy with, if that makes sense. Anyway, moving to something that has been developing, since we've been on air. Now, a train was derailed in India around 8:40 a.m. this morning. The injury numbers just jumped up to 150. The death toll is at 100. So 100 have tragically lost their lives, with 150 further injured. From the quote, there are people trapped inside of the train. This is very... we are being very careful using gas cutters, said director of police. He said the toll was likely to rise as rescue workers yet again are yet to access some of the worst damaged coaches. The derailment occurred in a village near an industrial city where the coaches jumped the tracks. Jeepers. Rescuers only used oxy torches to open the derailed coaches to reach those trapped inside, while cranes were deployed to lift the coaches from the tracks. Jeepers. Medical teams were providing first aid near the site, while the more seriously injured were moved to hospitals in the industrial city nearby, Mr. Chatterley said. At least two dozen suffered from serious injuries, he said. A passenger said that the train was travelling around normal speed and stopped suddenly. Quote, yeah, it restarted, then we heard a crash. When we came out of the train, we saw a few coaches had derailed. Jeepers. That was from a passenger whose coach did remain on the tracks. It was not immediately clear what caused the carts to derail. The Prime Minister exposed his concern over the derailment. Quote, astonished beyond words of the loss of lives due to derailing of the Pada Indamore Express. My thoughts are with the bereaved families. Jeez. It's a major railway junction, and hundreds of trains pass through it every day. Several trains using the line have been diverted to other routes. Accidents are relatively common on India's sprawling rail network, one of which is the world's largest but lacks modern signalling and communication systems. Most of the crashes are blamed on poor maintenance and human error. Trains are the most popular mode of transport for millions of Indians, and around 23 million passengers use Indians' vast railway network every day. The worst train accident occurred in 1981 when a passenger train fell into into a river, killing nearly 800 people. Several other major train crashes had claimed hundreds of lives since then. But I wanted to tell you that, wanted to bring you up on that one. Jeez. That just... breaks your heart, that one does. But speaking of breaking your heart, there's another story about Mr. Trump, of course. Because of course there is. The budget is coming up. So, Budget Watch 2017. Budget Watch. Mr. Trump's not likely to affect our budget. They say that Trump isn't big news for the Australian economy, but looking at Australia's future bottom line, Mr. Richardson cautioned against overstating the potential impact of a Trump administration. It's not Trump himself, it's the administration. Mr. Richardson said the area where Mr. Trump could hurt Australia's economy would be trade, but he said overall for people not to panic. The changes are the policies that change, but what will change will be the slower and smaller that you've heard during the campaign, Mr. Richardson said. By and large, Mr. Trump is unlikely to be big news for the economy of Australia. That is what's being reported. In a statement, Treasurer Scott Morrison said the report, quote, correctly identified the need for more important saving measures to be passed by the Parliament that are opposed by Labor, unquote. This reinforces the position adopted by rating agencies who continue to watch our Parliament to see whether they will support the government's approved pathway to restore the budget to balance, Scott Morrison said. Shadow Treasurer Chris Bowen and opposition finance spokesperson Jim Chalmers said the budget monitor predicted the deficit to blow out by $24 billion over Ford estimates. Quote, with the rating agencies already expressing concern over the budget position, any further blowout of this nature will put our hard-earned AAA credit rating even more danger of being lost, a joint statement read, adding a blowout would make it harder to return the surplus at the budget to surplus in 2020-2021. Excuse me. Wow. That's definitely difficult to say. However, Mr. Morrison said speculation about Australia's credit rating was no panacea to repairing the budget. Quote, Labor's approach at the last election was to worsen the budget deficit over the falling estimates of increased taxes that would slow economic growth, the Treasurer said. Ooh, fighting words. Fighting words. Yay, ding ding. So last week, in case you missed it, speaking of finance, the wage growth has hit a record low of 1.9%. Bureau of Statistics wage price index rose 0.4% in the September quarter, seasonally adjusted. It was just up 1.9% over the past year, a record low. In fact, annual wages growth is exactly half of what it was 4 years ago. Public sector employers did a little better than their private sector counterparts, with 2.3% pay increase compared to 1.9%. Jeepers. However, ABS said wage growth was weak across all sectors. Quote, in September of 2016, that quarter was a growth range from 1% for mining to 2.4% for healthcare and social assistance. The latest ABS Consumer Price Index puts inflation at 1.3% over the year to September. It's interesting, as wages grow, what would that be? As WCI, what's WCI? What's WCI? What does this graph mean? Tell me what this graph means. Showing this graph compiled by JF Morgan confirms, as unemployment goes up, wage growth goes down. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, I suppose that's fair. There's less people in the workplace. Why would you pay them more? Fair. The main reason for underemployment and unemployment affect wages so directly, they create what economics call a reserve army of labor. A reserve army of labor, people who are desperate for work or more work, who may accept a lower wage to take someone else's job. It's a competition thing. Gotcha. Okay. So unemployment has growth, but job competition has grown as well. The more you know. So I didn't realize that. There are lots of skilled people without work or enough work. Existing employees also tend to moderate their pay demands for fear of being replaced or being unable to find another job if they get the sack. There you go. All to say that wages are not growing. And all to say that Trump will not affect our economy? Okay, I am very confused. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, well, would it be very difficult to be wiped off the map, so to speak? But a town in Victoria has done just that. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, thanks for joining us. It's Dale Campbell with you on a Sunday. It's 11:49. Thank you.
Whether we're waking you up or putting you to sleep, this is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. That's right, it's closing time. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. I don't know why I'm singing it like that, but anyway, so I also want to close up the show by thanking you everyone for joining us here on a Sunday, but not only that, but wishing me a very happy birthday. I know, it was my birthday yesterday. By the way, that's Saturday the 19th of November. Okay. Indeed, closing time. That means I stopped playing the music. November 19th is my birthday, but thank you for everyone who wished me a happy birthday, and thank you, I want to say this, so thank you, on my birthday, we want to talk about this, we'll get to the story I was meant to get to, don't worry, but it's not much, but went out for a beautiful lunch, with my dad and my stepmom, I went to work, which I don't know whether that's a good thing or not, but the night before that had a joint sort of birthday dinner with my flatmate, whose birthday was on Friday, went out with his parents, best friend of his, myself, and another best friend of his and his dad. So there was quite a few of us there. After that, went out into town. A couple of friends were in town, so I went out there, saw my birthday with them, and came home. That was a late night. That was a 2 o'clock night, and then went out to lunch later on that day. I went to work. Finished work at midnight, and I worked all day today, so I'm really tired, so I'm going straight to bed after I've finished here, believe me. But before I do get out of here, I want to tell you more about this town in Victoria that was stripped of its town status, but it's finally to get itself back on the map. Norat. Nested to an extinct volcano in Australia's Fukuta town that technically doesn't exist. Norad in southwest Victoria is about 210 km from Melbourne. Lost its status as a town in 2012 because its population dipped below 200. According to the 2011 census, the population of the town was only 167. It was stripped of its town title not long after. Abandoned shops, the empty streets, but Norat has a heart. Has more heart than most communities. For those who live there are fighting to get Norat back on the map and show people it's a place worth living. In Norat, there's a cafe, a pub, a post office, and a lonely petrol pump, but locals say that's all they need. Michael Leo, who owns the Mount Norat Hotel, with his partner Richard, chucked in the corporate towel about a year and a half ago. He's working in a PR for Peter Alexandra, but wanted a simpler life and traded the pink pajamas for a country flannelette. Oh, gotcha. Richard's parents lived in Norat and went to the pub. When the pub came up for sale, the men decided it would be a good endeavor. Quote, "There's a real community here. It's an interesting and creative place," Mr. Leo told news.com.au. His pub sits at the bottom of an extinct volcano, a place that attracts visitors who hike the rim of the volcano. Despite only 190 people now living in the town, Mr. Leo said he was still meeting people he hadn't seen before. Quote, "But if you do something, people know about it very quickly," he says. Mr. Leo hoped more people would see the beauty that lives in Norat and receive the boarded up stores since become workshop and garages. Quote, "I'd love to see them filled with something. I think a little baker or even a little vintage store," he said. You'd catch the locals on a Friday night having a yarn over a pot of beer and a slice of pizza, or on a Saturday morning sipping coffee at the Shed Cafe. Quote, I do miss Melbourne, but I am so busy, it's not something I dwell on for very long, Mr. Leo said. But for us, we never could have the opportunity in Melbourne to buy a 100-year-old pub. But that is very true. Vicky Ma, who is the NORAT show secretary, didn't even think the town should have lost its status in 2012. It's just a number, she told news.com.au. What makes a town? According to statisticians, yes, it's the number that loses the township. But it's a lot more than a town, the number. It's the people who live there and bring back the community spirit. Good on them. I mean, it does, for all intents and purposes, it does sound like just a little country town. I mean, there's definitely nothing wrong with a good old country town. That is an interesting question. And we'll leave you on this note. What does make a town a town? We'll leave that with you. Technically, for me, it's a post... I'm just kidding. It's a post office. Wow. It's a postcode that makes a town, technically. Ba-da-ba-ba-bum. But this does sound like a town. I mean, technically, if no one... It's not the fact that no one lives there. There is people that live there, so... Yeah. Good on them. Good on NORAT in Victoria. If you're ever down in Victoria, if you're ever 210Ks away from Melbourne, you do find yourself... in NORAT. That's going to do it for us. Thanks for joining us here on a Sunday with Dale Campbell. Starting a new age today. Feeling the oldness. Feeling the oldness. Is that even a thing? I don't know if that's a thing. Thanks for joining us. It's 12:01.
This has been a podcast of the Geek AM Media Network, where you put your geek in and geek out. For more geeky goodness, head over to geek-io.net. Copyright 2016.